The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator... Belleville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes, and welcome and happy new year. It is Monday, January 2nd, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. We're so glad that you could be here for this new year, our new debut. We're in widescreen now. Look, we're widescreen. Isn't that awesome? And coming at you at 96 kilobits stereo sound. I hope you're enjoying it, and I hope you're having a great new year. Ganja John can't be with us today. I know I promoed that Ganja John would be here, and I know everyone's looking forward to seeing Ganja John. He's at the Rose Bowl right now watching the Oregon Ducks and the Wisconsin Badgers fight it out. And they just went to halftime, and we're going to go to our guest here in studio. You know him, you love him, you can't get enough of him. Wiz Khalifa is here with us. Hey, Wiz Khalifa.
Aloha, everybody.
What's our sports update here with the Rose Bowl?
I believe we are tied up at the halftime at 28-28. We're about to come back in just a couple minutes. I'm streaming it here. Live at ESPN.com, and I'm looking for Ganja John. So
yeah, he's one of those blobs of yellow out there, I'm sure. Also coming to us from our virtual studio in beautiful Grastoria, Oregon, is the talented and ebullient Cannabis Carrie. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, it feels so good to be back. Yeah. It's not really the beautiful Astoria today. It's the rainy and dramatic and stormy Astoria today.
Yeah, it's kind of rainy and stormy out here as well. But that's January in the Pacific Northwest. We're all quite used to it by now. Hey, Carrie, great to have you here on the show. I hope you're having a happy new year up there.
Oh, yeah, it's been beautiful up here. We had a really nice Christmas break, and I'm so excited to be back on the show. Looking forward to 2012, an election year, and I really like the new time slot.
Yeah.
Working out for me.
New time slot is working out great for everyone here in the studio, 4 o'clock Pacific, 7 o'clock Eastern time. We're hoping we got more listeners out there in the Eastern and Central time zones, because I got to thinking, you know, who really needs to hear this show? Who really needs to know what's happening out there? And it's the folks in the Eastern and the Central time zones, those states in the South and the Midwest and the East Coast, where they don't have as much information and culture and knowledge about you know, what's happening with medical marijuana, and vice versa. We need to hear from them as well. Those of us out here on the West Coast or in Colorado, we kind of have it good, you know, as far as dealing with marijuana. I know it feels awful sometimes out here, and we tell all these stories of busts and raids and so forth, but you know, folks in Oklahoma are getting life sentences for making hash. So, you know, we got it pretty good out here. One of the things we like to do here on the show is to make sure that you're caught up with all the latest news here in the cannabis community. And Cannabis Carrie is our senior news editor with the new promotion, and she's got the headlines for us today. What's in the news, Carrie?
Well, there was so much news, I was a tad bit overwhelmed. So we've got a lot of great news stories coming up this week. But today, we're going to cover three of them. We're going to dig right into Washington State, that looks like they're going to be the first to belly up to the bar and have a legalization initiative on their ballot. Also, we're going to go to professional sports that are changing, a particular industry that's changing their drug testing policy. And we're going to go to New Jersey, where a man got more than he bargained for after arguing with a police officer.
All right. We'll get to that right after this first break. Also coming up on the show, it's Roots Monday, so we got some new music. Actually, new old music. It's old music from Fats Waller going back into the Reefer Jazz Archives with a song called Reefer Song. And then, you know, we've been off the air since December 9th, and there's been a lot of things that happened in the month of December that I've just got some ranting built up, and I got to get this ranting out. So you're going to get a double shot, a grassroots activism rant, and a radical rant. We're going to talk about the Weed Wars, the Stevie D'Angelo. We're going to talk about wellness, not intoxication. Lots of stuff coming up next.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Weedmaps.com. I'm Radical Russ from Normal. In my job as outreach coordinator, I travel every month. And when I'm on the road, I need a fast, accurate way to find the medical marijuana dispensaries in the area. So I turn to Weedmaps.com. Weedmaps.com has the best dispensary locator online or on your mobile device. Search by zip code or let Weedmaps find you, and in seconds you'll have the addresses, phone numbers, and customer service reviews for the medical marijuana dispensaries in the local area. Weedmaps.com also has a section devoted to helping you find a doctor who understands and recommends medical marijuana under your state's law. You can even check prices on the Medical Marijuana Stock Exchange. Coming soon, you'll even be able to find the listings of normal attorneys and chapters, local head shops and grow shops, and the best weed-friendly businesses. Weedmaps.com has the information you need to be an informed cannabis consumer. Visit Weedmaps.com today, a proud sponsor of the Normal Network. Inhaling deeply of the sacred smoke.
Warning, Neil deGrasse Tyson might grab you off the street at any minute.
I know that the molecules in my body are traceable to phenomenon in the cosmos that makes me want to grab people in the street and say, have you heard this? The
beauty is this is Normal Show Live.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that gives us these precious rights. Treat law enforcement with respect, and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search or seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
And big moves in Washington State. The group behind the effort to legalize marijuana use in Washington State submitted 341,000 signatures to get their initiative on the ballot on Thursday. Out of those, they will need at least 241,153 valid signatures to qualify. New Approach Washington are the backers who raised over $1 million, with 250,000 of that coming from Peter Lewis, the ex-CEO of Progressive Insurance, who has become a cannabis philanthropist. Initiative 502 would create a regulated system of state-licensed growers, processors, and outlets, and at each stage, the state will collect a 25% excise tax. They estimate that the taxes in the first year alone will be over $200 million for the state. Those licensees at each state will cost $250 with a renewal fee of $1,000. I-502 also lays out rules that prohibit producers and processors from having any financial interest in retailers. It's similar to the rules for alcohol, and conveniently, the State Liquor Control Board will administer the program if the initiative passes. Anyone that's in the state over 21 years old would be able to buy up to an ounce of marijuana at a time, or a pound of cannabis products such as brownies. The initiative also deals with marijuana-infused liquids. You can buy or possess up to 72 ounces of marijuana-infused liquids. I-502 has some heavy supporters. Outside of the money donors, it is also backed by two former U.S. attorneys for Western Washington State and Seattle City Attorney and ex-head of the Seattle FBI office, Pete Holmes. The Washington State Democrats are also on board, and an impressive array of heavy-hitting former judges in both superior and municipal courts, and also the King County Bar Association. But on Thursday, as the signatures were being turned in, there was already a group of pro-marijuana activists protesting what they think is a huge flaw in the initiative. Opponents of the initiative, but not opponents of legalization of marijuana, take issue with a part of the initiative that would make it illegal for a motorist to have more than 5 nanograms of THC per milliliter of blood in their system. Medical marijuana activists say that it puts an unfair burden on patients who may have a high tolerance since they are using marijuana to control pain or other symptoms, and put them at a higher risk of DUI arrest. Patients have expressed their fears that their driving privileges will be taken away, and some are planning their own initiative to counter I-502. We do have some video outlining the controversy of the initiative from Como News in Seattle.
Looks like you will have a chance to vote on legalization of marijuana next year. Como Force Brian Johnson says supporters of Initiative 502 filed so many petition signatures today, they appear sure of a spot on the November ballot.
350,000 signatures to make pot legal in Washington State. Sponsors say it's time for our state to recognize reality.
What Americans realize is that the war on drugs is not working. We know that it's a failure.
These petitions would allow anyone over 21 to buy 1 gram of marijuana. You might expect a person who runs a medical marijuana dispensary and is a user, like Michael Allison, to say, right on. You'd be wrong.
I don't care if they legalize it. I don't care if they put it in liquor stores. I don't care if they sell it on every street corner and I have to go work for a living. That's cool. What bothers me is if they make me a criminal every time I get behind the wheel.
You see, the initiative sets a limit for THC, the active ingredient in marijuana, in the blood. Any more makes you intoxicated. The limit is 5 nanograms. Rick Smith undergoes dialysis. He had his blood tested recently.
I go to dialysis and the cramping and the nausea and everything afterwards. So after the 5-hour abstinence, I had only lowered to 35. I would still be illegal to drive home.
Rick's supporters and others showed up to protest, saying the initiative will make medical marijuana users criminals. Proponents insist it's a correctable problem. What happens next? Well, the marijuana initiative will likely be on a crowded ballot. There's a governor's race with no incumbent. A presidential election year. Political consultant Kathy Allen predicts an 87% turnout. What does that mean for marijuana?
What it means to the marijuana initiative? It's going to pass. Handily. First ballot. Not a problem.
If that's true, the only real question will be, how will the feds react to a state drug store? Brian Johnson.
Well, this is a difficult issue for a lot of people to get their minds around, because on the one hand, we've got I-502, which has got some of the best backing ever for a marijuana initiative as far as the money, the big money supporters, the big name backers in law enforcement. I mean, the former head of Seattle's FBI division office, the prosecutor who put away Mark Emery. I mean, some serious big names here that are going to bring a lot of those nervous, scared soccer mom type voters over to our side and vote for legalization. But at what cost? What is this? What is the poison pill here that we have to swallow? Well, it's this unscientific, inaccurate, unnecessary 5 nanograms per milliliter DUID standard, which, as pointed out in the show there, very few patients who are regular users or just regular cannabis consumers like myself are ever going to test below 5 nanograms per milliliter, even if we have a long period of abstinence, even if we're waking up the next day after 8 hours of sleep and no use the prior day. We could still be deemed impaired by that 5 nanograms. Now, the proponents of 502 will say, well, you still have to have probable cause to pull someone over. There still has to be some indication that you're driving impaired before it even gets to the blood test phase. By the time you get from where you're at to where you're going to take the blood test, more time has elapsed, and so forth. So what people really need to start thinking about here is it worth it to kill the chance of having that headline, that very first state to have ever said, Washington State legalizes marijuana? Is that a big enough game changer in order to think that some people indeed are going to get busted and be considered guilty of something they're not guilty of it. These are the tough decisions that have to be made in politics. And for my money, I can't tell anyone to vote against legalization, but I can't tell anyone to vote for a 5 nanogram per milliliter DUID statute either. It's going to be a tough decision to make. And during 2012, we'll try to bring you all the information you need to make the intelligent choice.
And I'm glad Coleco's here for this one. We have an article out of The Guardian UK that is reporting that the international body that governs professional surfing is about to change their policies. The Association of Surfing Professionals has decided on their 2012 policies for screening surfers competing in world surfing events. They have decided for the first time to introduce comprehensive drug testing for surfers to compete. Surfing as a sport has grown out of a somewhat counterculture movement with the beach lifestyle and the endless search for a sandy beach with good waves as the seed that inspired some of today's top athletes in the sport. But the death of a triple world champion in November of 2010 has had a chilling effect on the surfing community. Andy Irons died not in the waves, but in a hotel room from a heart attack brought on by an acute mixture of drug ingestion, according to his autopsy. Traces of methadone, methamphetamine, and some cocaine metabolites were all found in his blood. Anthony Rufo, a pioneer of the Santa Cruz surfing scene, was also caught with an ounce of methamphetamine last year and is facing a jail sentence. Although marijuana has always been part of the surfing scene in Hawaii, the mecca for world-class surfing, it seems like harder drugs with more enhancing properties such as steroids or amphetamines are more likely found in surfing competitors that are already being tested at European events and in Ireland. Part of the outcry about the use of speed-related drugs in the industry, some say, is the continuing decline of surfing's losing its soul as it goes mainstream. A spokesperson for the Association of Surfing Professionals, Dave Proden, said that the move to drug tests has the full support of the surfers on tour as they want to be taken more seriously as professional athletes. The new policy was drafted with guidance from the World Anti-Doping Agency. The budget for testing has already been approved at the annual meeting in November, and for surfers on the world tour, they can expect full-spectrum drug testing before all world-rated events this year.
Boy, I got to tell you, you know what my opinion is on drug testing in general, and when we're talking about these world-class athletes, that we can't trust these people to make intelligent decisions about their bodies. But I'm from Idaho. What the hell do I know about surfing? Let's go to Wiz Coleco over here. What do you think on this story?
I think it's crazy. I mean, I saw it this morning, and I mean, I like you said, it grew out of that counterculture, and I kind of think in some regards snowboarding is kind of similar, because snowboarding grew out of that same counterculture, but eventually started having to subject themselves to the drug test and went to move to the more Olympic and professional thing. So, I mean, I kind of understand moving to the professional realm and needing drug testing, but obviously I hate drug tests myself. So.
Yeah, it sucks.
And from Pompton Lakes, New Jersey, a story that began in September is making the rounds this week. Darren Richardson was pulled over in his 2004 black BMW 325 for what police said was them witnessing Mr. Richardson nearly causing a traffic accident after he narrowly avoided hitting another car. Police pulled him over, and according to the police documents of the encounter, they say that Richardson began arguing with them immediately. Richardson did have a record of serving 2 years in prison on a drug charge and admitted he just doesn't trust cops. The dispute continued between Richardson, two police officers at the scene, and Mr. Richardson's passenger. In a matter of minutes, both men were in handcuffs while they waited for a canine unit to come check out the car, since the officer on the scene reported the smell of raw marijuana coming from the vehicle. The dog scratched at the trunk, a warrant was obtained, and the car was impounded. 4 days later, a search was conducted on the vehicle, but nothing was found, and a second dog was brought in. This time, the dog scratched the dashboard, so another round of searching began. Still unable to find any marijuana, the police called in a trap expert to find out if marijuana was hidden in any secret compartments. Again, nothing was found, but now the car was torn up to the point of not being able to be driven. In the end, the compartment expert said that maybe the car was once used to transport drugs, a claim that Richardson denies. When Darren Richardson was finally able to pick up his impounded car 3 weeks later, the instrument panel, the leather dashboard were gone, his seats were torn up, and the gear shifts were ripped out. All in all, according to the police reports, three different police agencies were called in to search the car, including a detective from the Federal Drug Task Force, and they spent a full 2 days tearing up the car apart to find absolutely nothing. Not a seed, not a stem, not a roach. Police say that they offered to pay the damages, but Richardson said he would turn it into his insurance, and Geico estimates the damage at $12,636.42. more than was paid to purchase the car, so they declared it a loss. Now, he was initially charged with evidence tampering and resisting arrest, but since there was no actual evidence to tamper with, those charges have been downgraded to petty disorderly persons offenses. His passenger was charged with making terroristic threats against the police, but that too was downgraded to the same charge. The police have opened an internal investigation into the incident, and both men will have to face their charges in municipal court later this month.
Yeah, how could you? Hey, guess what time it is? That means it's time for taking a break. Let's get right to it. I forgot my phone was going to tell me that, too. We're just itching to get to that first 420 break of the first week of the new year. Coleco, let's get on it.
Let's get to it.
Right after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man, a reefer man? Have you ever met that funny reefer man, a reefer man? If he said he swam to China, he would send to South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
How soon can you land? I can't tell. You can tell me I'm a doctor.
No, I mean I'm just not sure.
Or can't you take a guess?
Well, not for another 2 hours.
You can't take a guess for another 2 hours?
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tune.
All right, welcome back. And, you know, after we take that 20 after break, it's the perfect time to be listening to some music. And if you're new to Normal Show Live, the way we do it here, we have a Daily Toker Tune every weekday. Mondays is Roots Monday with blues, jazz, folk, and acoustic, country and such. Electric Tuesday, we do the dance and disco and electronic kind of things. Irie Wednesday, we've got island music, calypso, Latin, reggae, ska, dubstep, that kind of stuff. Thursday, Groovin' Thursday with rap, hip-hop, soul, R&B, and funk. And then on Fridays, Rockin' Friday with metal, rock, jam band, punk, and alt country. So check it out. Every week, every day, we've got a new tune for you. And most of them we make available for download at our blog at stash.normal.org. So let's get right into this one. One of the legends of the reefer jazz era, this is Fats Waller with the Reefer Song.
Hey, cat, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. I just left the Diff Studios. Here we are in Harlem. Everybody's here but the police, and they'll be here any minute. It's high time, so catch this song. Here it is. Say, I dreamed about a reef of 5 feet long. A mighty man, but not too strong. You'll be high, but not for long. If you're a viper, I'm the king of everything. I gotta be high before I swing. Let the bells ring, ding dong ding. If you're a viper, say you know you're high when your throat gets dry.
fine dandy. Oh, yes, you run down to the candy store. Bust your conch on peppermint candy. Then you know your little brown body's sent. You don't give a darn if you don't pay rent. Cause the sky is high, so am I, yes, yes. Yes, I vibe a bit. Well, I'm gonna vibe a bit on 88 now. Oh, stop it, darling. I didn't know you cared. That's enough now. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Let me dream now. That's a killer. Yes, baby. You better nix out on the sidelines there. My wife's in here tonight. She don't vibe either. You know, get away. Are you kidding? Oh, dear. Say you know you're high. Yes, I know I'm high. Cause everything is fine dandy. Yes, gone down to the candy store. Get me Wrigley's or some peppermint candy. I love it, I love it, I love it. Yes, baby, but my body's sin. I ain't worried about no rent. Get away from me, you hussy. Yeah. Hi, so have I. I'm gonna lay down and relax. Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
What makes something funny? How does humor impact health and psychological well-being? How can you incorporate humor into everyday life? A concise, reader-friendly introduction to an important but often underappreciated topic in modern psychology, Humor 101 explains the role of comedy, jokes, and wit in the sciences and discusses why they are so important to understand. Psychology professor Dr. Mitch Earlywine draws from his personal experiences in stand-up comedy to focus on how humor can regulate emotion, reduce anxiety, and diffuse tense situations, expose pretensions, build personal relationships, and much more. He irreverently debunks the pseudoscience on the topic of humor and leaves readers not only funnier, but better informed. It's part of the Psych 101 series from Springer Publishing, Humor 101 by Dr. Mitch Earlywine, PhD.
Been busted? Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record. Normal, unlike any other marijuana or drug reform organization, is built from the ground up by grassroots activists. We are the Marijuana Smokers Lobby, and we aren't just anti-prohibition, we're pro-marijuana. Every week, we take some time to talk to the citizens of local Normal chapters across the country and around the world, as well as others who are working to make a difference in the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition in this segment we call Grassroots Activism.
All right, welcome back, everyone. And, you know, we were gone for a while from the airwaves here with the getting the new Dr. Funkenstein computer built up and the mothership all. And we've got so many things that have happened here that I had to take time to comment on. And one of these is something, it's a rant, but it's also something to try to convince people why legalization is the right strategy for today. And what I'm coming around to this for is because I've been online having a lot of discussions with marijuana activists from all over, you know, California, Oregon, all over the country. And one of them forwarded an article he wrote that was a reaction to an online conversation that we're having. And let's call this the crossroads debate. This is the crossroads debate. And some people, like the person I'm speaking of and others who support this this position, I'm going to call medicalizers. They believe that what we ought to do is to continue, if we want to legalize marijuana for all adult use, is we've got to continue expanding medical marijuana under this idea that all use is medical. or it's all about wellness or supplementing our wellness, or and that we need to broaden the conditions for which patients can legally get cannabis until the requirements are so low that cannabis is treated like aspirin, a safe over-the-counter substance that needs no doctor and no registrations. Now, myself and others, which I'm going to call legalizers, disagree. And by the way, when I call us legalizers, I don't mean to say that the people that are medicalizers don't want legalization. We all want the same thing. We all, the people in this debate, want to see an end to the arrest and the prosecution and harassment and seizure and terrorization and discrimination against all marijuana consumers. Let's just get that on the table. We all agree on that. So when I say legalizers, I'm just trying to say those of us who aren't pursuing this medical strategy, okay? Now we disagree because we believe that, yeah, sure, cannabis can be medical, but it's also spiritual, it's also recreational, it's also industrial, it's also a good time on a camping trip, it's also a fun way to listen to a concert, and we don't have to have some sort of medical excuse to get high. So, in this crossroads debate, this one writer, David Malmo Levine, wrote this: "The biggest mistake we could possibly make is to associate medicine with only the sick. Mickey Martin, the cannabis warrior, makes that mistake in his latest blog. He argues that anyone who says all use is medical is also saying in the same breath that every stoner is a patient. What some of us are actually saying, and all of us, including Mickey Martin, should be saying, is that all use is medical, and when the war on cannabis finally ends and cannabis is finally regulated, first regulated like wine and then eventually like coffee beans, nobody needs to be a patient any longer. Doctors are a temporary buffer against the police. They are not the end goal of those who recognize cannabis as medicine and who recognize each user as someone taking a medicine and feeling the medicinal effects and thus being a medicinal user, regardless of whether they are abusing it or having fun or blowing smoke rings or whatever. Until marijuana is regulated like wine, people will need to use doctors to protect them from the police." Now, one thing that I just caught out of that just from reading it out loud is that basic idea that those of us who are smoking to get high, we're really patients, we just refuse to acknowledge it. No, I'm just smoking to get high, okay, David? That's it, just smoking to get high. And the problem with this medical, you know, all use is medical, all use is wellness, wellness for this, wellness for that, is you're asking the reader to accept that we're going to go medical to wine to coffee. Now, nobody I know calls their after-dinner wine or their before-work coffee medicine. Now, I get that you want to inclusivize cannabis, like herbology or acupuncture or whatever non-traditional healing wellness thing, but none of those things are also something that young people do to get high. If the end point of this is it should be treated like coffee, then face the public and say it should be treated like coffee. If it is a substance that we should be able to use because we want to stay well or treat illness or commune with Jaw or get laid or enjoy Jerry Garcia solos, then just say so. Now, personally, I like treat it like wine better. I support age limits and location restrictions for cannabis use. Now, all this dancing around this holistic medical wellness makes the public feel like there's something at the core of this that we can't be honest about, and that we have to dress it up with some sort of euphemism. No matter how holistically, medically wellnessy cannabis is, mom and dad still worry about their teenager becoming a wastoid. Folks will still worry that you're wrecking your car into them on your holistically, medically wellnessy cannabis. The core we're dancing around here is that marijuana can get you high. Whether it's relaxation, recreation, wellness, stress relief, enhancement, medicated, lifted, stoned, the name we give it does not change what it is. Now, we know that there's more to fear from drunk teenagers and drivers on OxyContin or cell phones, but those facts don't make the folks feel any less scared of the marijuana. It's like saying, you know, don't worry about your kids surfing in June. Shark bite attacks are much more prevalent in August. Well, now I'm worried about the shark bites in June. Wait, they're not as prevalent? You mean they aren't? What? Look, read some George Lakoff, Drew Weston, even Frank Luntz and Karl Rove. People don't vote and think reasonably and rationally. They vote and think from fear and self-interest. Now, we played the self-interest card with medical marijuana. The voter was forced to decide whether he or she would allow cops to imprison sick people and let them suffer without pot. This was the self-interest factor greater than I got to protect my society or my kids from the dope. And that's the self-interest. But now our opponents are trumping it with their fear cards. They're giving us the fears of Mexican gangs growing it in the forest to supply medical marijuana dispensaries, drivers that are stopped with hundreds of pounds of California or Colorado medical marijuana on the way to your state. Your kids are smoking more pot in the medical marijuana states because they think it's safe. Your neighbor's converting his house to a grow factory to profit from medical marijuana. And there's also a self-interest factor of every voter who feels he or she was bamboozled when she sees a placard or a get your $45 card here from a tent, or here's an ad for a medical marijuana expo featuring the Cottonmouth Kings or Cheech and Chong. Now is the time to get the fear and self-interest that works in our favor. Until the voter fears the status quo of prohibition more than the mystery of a new legal substance, fear of medical marijuana adding to the drug problem is going to keep us in a defensive posture of approving stricter and stricter medical marijuana regulations. You can't get the medical marijuana for anxiety wellness approved outside of California so long as the voters think druggies can fake anxiety. So we should make them fear the unregulated dealer who panders to kids far more than a regulated clerk would. Fear the violence in Mexico that will spill over our border more and lead our troops into a drug war on our continent more. And nobody's shooting anybody over Corona or Dos Equis. You know, fear the over-militarization of our domestic police force and the inevitable corruption and racial profiling that results from trying to stop adults from smoking a joint. Fear that someone who could use medical marijuana won't be able to get it, because no matter how you craft a medical use law, someone won't be sick enough, or they won't be able to afford the doctor visit, or they won't be able to afford the state registry, or they won't be able to afford the prohibition-priced marijuana if they can even get the card. Fear that the truly sick, legitimate patients now have to suffer shortages or live in fear of both the illegal gangs of rippers and the legal gangs of SWAT due to prohibition. Then you ply them with the self-interest of, yeah, we get increased tax revenues and we'll reduce crime and there'll be new industries and yada, 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 yada. Now, here's where someone usually pops up in the debate, and I've been on these online debates for a while, where they'll say, yes, yes, Russ, but we tried all that and it didn't work. Only when we did medical did the laws really change. Well, I disagree with that. I think we tried all that and it did work. And that's why we got medical laws. When Nixon's drug war began, marijuana legalization support was at 12% in the polls. By 1977, after nothing but I smoke pot and I like it a lot strategy, 11 states decriminalized and support was at 30%. But then it hit the 80s. And many factors, including the cultural ties to cocaine, the rejection of 1970s malaise and the 1960s culture war, and the bipartisan escalation of the overall drug war, led to legalization support dropping down to 16%. But those polls began inching upwards in the late 80s and early 90s before anyone outside of San Francisco or an obscure medical journal was putting medical with marijuana. We went from 1987 and a Supreme Court nominee being sacked for admitting that he'd smoked pot at Harvard to 1992 and a presidential candidate winning after admitting smoking pot at Oxford, kinda. I'd venture that the rise owes to baby boomers whose kids had left the nest and rediscovered pot and remembering how pretty cool it is, actually. I'd also note that the rise of hip-hop during that period, late 80s, early 90s, spreading the love of the chronic from the coasts for the rest of the youth of America. And the only message being spread back in the bleak 80s was Jack Herer's and others preaching about the free and unregulated hemp, with medical use as just one aspect of this marvelous plant. Then, after that, it was possible to pitch medical marijuana to a public that softened to the notion that personal marijuana use wasn't a big deal. I doubt Prop 215 does so well in 1986 or 1988. And I don't think it would do so well in a 2012 vote if it were sunsetting and California had to vote to keep it exactly as it is. Interesting to think about until somebody polls that. Now, times change. There's enough evidence for most people, from medical use they see and read about to their own personal use, that the strategy of the 1970s, legalize it, doesn't face the same perils today as it did in the 80s. Support is now at 50%, not 16. People under 50 who've tried it amount to 52% of the population, not 30%. More than half, 51% of the people surveyed, know that it's a safer substance than alcohol. Three presidents have tried it, and the greatest Olympic swimmer ever famously inhaled during his greatness. And Google abounds with factual references on cannabis and its users. But people don't change without the pain of staying the same being greater than the fear of change. The public is at the precipice. They're ready to leap into legalization, knowing it's the right path, but scared of how to get there and whether it's worse than just staying here at the ledge. Medical doesn't make them leap. Medical is some other guy or gal on the precipice with their own issues. I don't even think regulation and taxation work as well, as many Americans think those two things are inherently bad. Thank you, Frank Luntz. I like to say control. It rankles some people in the choir, to be sure. No corporate control of cannabis. But to the public, it evokes the counter out of control that many of them feel about marijuana, be it medical or recreational. I think a wise initiative drafter would pen the Marijuana Control and Revenue Act and get a whole lot of votes out of that. All right, we got to come back here after this short little break. We got time for another rant that's been saved up over December. So coming up next, a radical rant on slippery slopes and gateway drugs. Or actually, I'm going to respond to Stephen D'Angelo's I don't believe in legalization comments.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
Tonight, I appeared on Jeopardy and, well, how do I say this? I lost. Not only did I lose, I lost to this guy. My basketball coach, you don't kick me off the team. That's right. I lost to Cheech Marin. Cheech of Cheech and Chong fame, pot smoking star of blunt burning films like Up in Smoke, Next Smoke, and Still Smoking. He not only beat me, he crushed me. When I heard I was up against Cheech Marin, I admit, I thought his reflexes would be slow, not to mention his synapses, perhaps, but I was so very, very wrong.
This guy, as Conan the Barbarian, on what's best in life, to crush your enemies and to hear the lamentation of their women. Cheech.
Who's Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yes. Cheech again.
Who's Al Pacino?
Right. Cheech.
What is Pillow Talk?
Right. Cheech.
What is Never Never Land?
Yes. Cheech.
What is Camelot?
Yes. Cheech.
What is a baster?
Yes. You're the winner today. Your charity will get $50,000 and Aisha and Anderson's charity, $25,000 each.
So I admit it, I lost to Cheech Marin. I tied for second with comedian Aisha Taylor, who is also a great player. And joining us now is the two-time Jeopardy champion, the man who crushed me, Cheech Marin. Cheech, congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much, Anderson.
Have people just been congratulating you? Do they pour out into the streets to congratulate you? Because people have been mocking me mercilessly since this thing was aired tonight.
It's tough when you can't hit a big league curveball, man. That's the separation point. But I don't listen to her because my head is like a sieve.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Well, you know, I had to say something about this. Stephen D'Angelo, the CEO of Harborside Health Center and recently the star of Discovery Channel's Weed Wars, has come under fire for his comments at the conclusion of episode 4, where he said, "I don't believe in legalizing cannabis for recreational purposes. I think cannabis should be used for purposes of wellness." This came at the very end of episode 4, and if you visit our blog at stash.normal.org, I've got the link to that spot right there on YouTube if you want to hear it for yourself in context. It comes at the end during the credits, but again, quote, "I don't believe in legalizing cannabis for recreational purposes. I think cannabis should be used for purposes of wellness," end quote. Now, Stephen D'Angelo took some heat for that in cyberspace, particularly in Steve Bloom's fiery denunciation in CelebStoner.com, which he entitled, "Say It Ain't So, Steve D'Angelo." And I got a link to that as well on the blog. Now, D'Angelo has responded in CelebStoner with some backpedaling on the statement, claiming his naivete in television by not realizing how editors would snip out his comments denouncing all criminal penalties and leave the "no recreational legalization" hanging there out of context. That could be the case, though the D'Angelo brothers have made the same "no recreational legalization" statements on live interviews on MSNBC's Dylan Radigan and Fox News's Bill O'Reilly, leading up to the premiere of Weed Wars. During the unedited 9 minutes and 31 seconds of the Radigan segment and the unedited 5 minutes and 17 seconds of the O'Reilly segment, I didn't hear any comments denouncing all criminal penalties. In fact, in the Radigan segment, I heard this exchange. Radigan: "So you think the legalization of marijuana as a recreational drug is a very different debate than the use of marijuana as a medicine for specific treatment?" Both the D'Angelo brothers say, "Absolutely." Radigan goes on, "And your goal is to draw the distinction between those who are suffering in the prohibition of recreational use that is preventing them from gaining legitimate access to the medicinal use." Stephen D'Angelo: "Yes, exactly." Radigan: "Do I have it?" Andrew D'Angelo: "We couldn't have said it better ourselves." Now, that really doesn't sound like "everybody ought to use cannabis without criminal penalty. We just need to call it wellness to get there." That sounds like you see two types of users: medical and recreational. And the latter are delegitimized by the former. I also heard Andrew toss off a line about medical marijuana patients being, quote, "the last people in the world who would probably buy a gun." What? How many stories have I done here on the Stash of medical marijuana patients whose home grows are the victims of rippers and robbers who have violently assaulted them? Who needs a gun more than a medical marijuana patient, Andrew? And Stephen said, quote, "In California, 67% of the people voted in favor of Prop 215, end quote. Well, it was actually 55.58%. But they hadn't seen the final Weed Wars episodes at that time, so they wouldn't have known that they needed to play up the whole comments denouncing all criminal penalties angle at that point, right? Yeah. So forgive me if I'm not convinced by this latest round of trying to play hate the stoners for the Discovery crowd and don't arrest the stoners for the celeb stoner crowd. And I will not accept hints that this criticism is sowing of disunity when he's the one distancing himself from legalization for all purposes. Every legalizer I know of votes for every medical initiative. But Prop 19 showed us that the reverse is not true. Who's the disunited? The legalizers trying to protect us all, or the medicalizers who keep fighting for that subgroup of us who are sick or disabled? Even championing an idea that all adults should use it for wellness separates those of us who are clearly not well from our cannabis use. Some people have an unhealthy relationship with cannabis, and they should be just as legal as alcoholics or chain smokers. Let me conclude by once again addressing Stephen D'Angelo's latest defense of his central "all uses wellness" platform from the Celeb Stoner response. This is Steve D'Angelo defending the "all uses wellness." At the same time, it's my strong belief that our movement's use of the concept and terminology of legalization for recreational purposes has caused us tremendous damage. Our opponents have used the term to paint us as unrestrained hedonists who advocate a society-wide lifestyle of self-indulgence. In the 80s, this kind of propaganda succeeded in undoing all the accomplishments our movement had made up till then. Wrong. Not a single one of the states that had decriminalized marijuana up through 1980 has repealed their statutes. Nothing became undone. Continue. And kept us on the defense until medical cannabis reinvigorated the movement in the mid-90s. But the anti-recreational propaganda left a bitter legacy of workplace urinalysis, housing discrimination, transplant denials, student aid denials, interference with parents' custodial rights, and more horrors sadly still with us. There was a time before our discoveries of industrial hemp and medical cannabis when an individual rights... Wait a minute. Before we discovered industrial hemp and medical cannabis... What? 6,000 BC? I'm sorry. Continue. When an individual rights argument was the main tool in the activist toolkit. Today, we have more compelling and effective reasons to advance for changing the laws than an individual's right to get high. We have more compelling and effective reasons than an individual's right to get high. I'm sorry. When there's a more compelling reason than an individual's right. Sorry, that's where the period goes for me. The discovery of the endocannabinoid system has established a sound scientific basis for the incredibly widespread therapeutic efficacy of cannabis, and almost two decades of experience has taught us that the vast majority of cannabis consumers are using it for wellness purposes. Really? Really? The vast majority of cannabis consumers are using it for wellness purposes. Okay. In addition, dozens of public opinion polls have shown that Americans support medical cannabis in numbers far greater than recreational cannabis. He's got the quotes on that. For me, all of this points in the direction of emphasizing the use of cannabis for wellness purposes rather than recreational purposes. That's why I've said I don't believe in legalizing cannabis for recreational purposes and still believe that. But I do believe that adult Americans should be empowered to make their own health and wellness decisions about cannabis. Several months ago, I released a paper, Wellness Not Intoxication, in which I called on the movement to reevaluate its use of the recreational cannabis concept. And please, folks, at the blog, stash.normal.org, you can get the link to the Wellness Not Intoxication. I've posted it many times. Read the whole argument for yourself. But that says to me, all people should be able to use it for wellness purposes, but I don't believe in legalizing it for recreational purposes. So how do we catch those people breaking the law for recreational purposes? Well, we don't, right? Because they're all using it. Oh, the vast majority are using it for wellness purposes. Well, what about that tiny minority that aren't using it for wellness purposes? They still get a sell? Is that how that works? Look, I appreciate your elaboration, but you're still hitching your legalization wagon to the it's okay because it's okay to smoke pot because theory. And as long as you do that, you invite some authority to determine whether your because is valid enough to keep your ass out of jail. You base your pivot on recreational on a faulty analysis of the pendulum swing in public opinion from pro-legalization 1970 to 79 to anti-legalization 1980 to 89 as being one where our opponents painted us as, quote, unrestrained hedonists who advocate a society-wide lifestyle of self-indulgence, end quote. But that hedonism image wasn't built on just marijuana. It was also built on rampant cocaine use, swingers, orgies, and Studio 54. Ronald Reagan successfully painted the image of mourning in America by coupling the inflation, unemployment, crime stats, and general malaise of the post-Nixon years to the ideals and culture of the 60s, 70s hippie movement. The biggest symbol of that was the pot leaf. And as Richard Pryor, John Belushi, and Len Bias led celebrity status to this tragedy of cocaine abuse, and as Miami Vice showed cocaine to be the devil's plaything, then the popularity of that marijuana, which had been so tightly interwoven with cocaine as just a good-time party drug, began to wane. I mean, really, look at the High Times centerfolds from like 1978 to 82. You'll see lines of cocaine along with Big Buds. They were thought of as both the simple, good-time, fun party drugs. But you are right, Stephen, that in the 1990s, medical marijuana revitalized legalization's popularity, primarily by reframing it as a medicine with benefits for very sick people. Then you add to that the baby boomers, whose kids flew the nest and now return to the pot they remembered in the 60s and 70s. And we've got a new public mindset that finally understands that marijuana is not cocaine and is not one of the harmful drugs out there. They even understand that it's safer than alcohol. But no matter how much pot helps the guy in the wheelchair, there are still guys like me who smoke pot because it's enjoyable. Now, maybe indeed it's staving off my alcoholism or my depression or my insomnia. But those are secondary benefits to the primary reason I use cannabis, which is when I smoke it, it makes me feel good. Just like my eating an orange because it tastes good, even though it's providing fiber for healthy digestion and vitamin C to stave off rickets, I'm not eating it for the benefits. I'm eating it because it's an orange and I enjoy it. Now, you want to call that wellness? Sure. But then that invites the listener to call a shot of whiskey or a good cigar or a glass of grapefruit juice or a session of sex, self or shared, wellness. And that's where loss of credibility will overtake your reframing. It's now the 2010s. We have older adults with personal experience, we got middle-aged adults who've seen it as medicine, and we got younger adults who've grown up in a world where medical use is okay, and Google tells them all the facts about cannabis that you and I growing up could never have learned unless you read the Emperor or Dr. Todd's papers, and not exactly that they were available in my high school library. As I've shown with polls and election results many times here, the 1990s strategy of medicalization is backsliding, and the 1970s strategy of legalization is on the rise. Since the passage of Prop 215 in 1996, the popularity of medical marijuana has gone from about 70% to about 80%, depending on polls, but it's risen a slight bit. Meanwhile, the popularity of marijuana legalization has gone from 24% to 50%. It has doubled. Now, why is it, if the popularity of legalization for all people is doubling, why is not the popularity of medical marijuana legalization increasing that much more than it is? Or in some polls showing it to be flatlining. And we see in the election results when we have South Dakota putting up a medical marijuana initiative that's defeated at 48% in 2006. They put up a similar initiative in 2010. It's defeated at 36%. It loses 12 points. In, what, 4 years there? We see medical marijuana in Montana was approved by about a 62% majority, and now this repeal light that has severely restricted the medical marijuana there looks like it's going to pass its referendum. They've got a referendum to try to repeal it. It looks like it will not be repealed by about the 62% that originally voted for medical marijuana. What I think medical marijuana supporters are mistaking here is when they see a poll that says 70 or 80% support for medical marijuana, they think the people out there answering the poll think of medical like we think of it. No. When they're answering that poll, in their mind, medical marijuana is what you give the terribly sick cancer patient, the terribly ill AIDS patient, and by God, yes, how could I not let them smoke a joint? They're not thinking of a Prop 215 area at a Cypress Hill concert with a whole bunch of 20-somethings puffing up foot-long joints and 12-foot vapor bags. That's not what they consider medical. And we are seeing it when we see the CBS News poll come back and asked, do you think medical marijuana is being used for severely medically ill people? And only 31% of the people surveyed say yes, while 52% of them say that it's being used for something else. This is the danger in continuing the medicalization strategy. And the more it's tried to be euphemized into all uses wellness and to be broad enough an umbrella to cover anybody who wants to use pot, the more the credibility goes out the window, the stronger they're going to want to fight back, cut back, tighten down on the legalization of marijuana for all people. This is the crossroads. That is absolutely true. But the time now is to take that ball that has been advanced so far with medical, it's been advanced as far as it can go. It's time to take that ball and run with it with legalization for all people. If this is a medicine that's safe enough for people to grow in their homes, to use any dosage they want, any time they want, then it's safe enough for anyone to be able to do that. Woo! Good to be ranting again, folks. Great to be back on the air. Thanks for joining us for our first 2012 episode of Normal Show Live. We'll be replayed in 6 hours and 12 hours. Our new lineup is in a 6-hour block, so if you miss something, wait 6 hours, it'll be on again. For Wiz Khalifa and Cannabis Carry, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned live for Toker Talk Radio at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern, where we take your calls at 971-533-7111. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it out one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a
your seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roam it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.